It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Success Happens. Another great day, another opportunity to speak with a fascinating person. And, you know, I try to make these shows relevant to what we're dealing with in the community. But, you know, sometimes we have to revisit issues that come up because they matter. And one of those issues, as you all know, that I'm passionate about is the opioid epidemic, or what we're now terming substance use disorder, because it's really not limited to heroin, although that seems to be the thing that's getting the most play right now in terms of visibility. But we don't want to leave out that there are lots of forms of addiction. And for those people who struggle with it, you know, it's a life changer. It's a life ruiner in some ways. And, you know, I've known, you know, people in my life who have suffered with this. And then you hear the stories in the news, and it's just devastating. So I wanted to bring to you somebody that I've gotten to know, and a program that I've gotten to know that I have a real heart for. I think that the work that's being done there and that can be done in the future, which is really important, because I say, if we don't reverse the trend, we're not making a difference. So later on in the show, we're going to have Sheriff Chuck Jenkins share with us what he sees from his perspective in that regard. But I wanted to introduce you today somebody who's just lovely and highly committed to this issue, and that's Linda Clark, who is the executive director of what's now called The Ranch. It used to be the Sheriff's Youth Ranch, and it had a particular kind of program that's altered from the original intent. So I'll let her kind of describe that to you. The ranch is down in southern Frederick County, and it's a lovely setting. And it, I think, is very much a retreat kind of space for people who are struggling with this issue. And we can't give up. You know, we can't give up. And I know there's lots of hurt and heartache around it. But, you know, what we have, I think, I'm going to say this, one thing I think that's critically important is that we do get to folks early and often. You know, I don't think you can really talk about this issue too young. I will say that my six-year-old has become aware of it because of something we dealt with. So, and he knows drugs are bad. Drugs are really bad. And I'm okay with him knowing that message. I'm really okay with it. So, you know, anyway, welcome, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
It's so great to have you here. And I just, again, thank you for your leadership and your commitment in something that is just terribly, terribly challenging to deal with. What I thought we would do is go ahead and do a brief introduction from your perspective of the evolution of the ranch, because it today is serving a slightly different purpose than it was originally intended. Can you talk briefly about the year it began and the purpose at the time?
Okay. The Maryland Sheriff's Youth Ranch began about 43 years ago, and it was started by the sheriffs in the state of Maryland to provide a group home for children in need in the state. The sheriffs were in their line of duty every day, coming across children that needed care and a place to go. And so they started it, all the sheriffs in the state. And we ran the group home for 41 years, working with Department of Social Services and Department of Juvenile Services. And touched a lot of lives with the children from our state. The youth ranch's numbers kept going down. And we decided to close that facility and to look at a new direction, to head in where we could be, more helpful to the state and what the need is right now for the state. So.
Very good. And so in your current iteration, you've recognized, obviously, with this opioid epidemic, the substance use disorder issue, alcohol is included in that, right? Mm-hmm. That you needed to reach adults. So tell us about the adult program now that you're offering.
Okay. Well, I will start to say that, you know, when we did start, we started with adolescents and thought we would switch over from the group home working with adolescents into this. But we quickly realized that the greatest need in our county and our state was for adult men ages, I'd say, from 18 to about 25, 26, that they were the ones struggling the most with the heroin and opioid addiction. And then also you just have the other addictions, alcohol, like you said, which is still very much a problem in our state.
Well, and I think that we maybe overlook it now because it's overshadowed by the heroin. So when you look at now the alcohol issue, that still, I think, is number one in terms of deaths.
It is.
So we don't want to overlook that issue. I do want to take a pause right now because we have Sheriff Jenkins on the phone. I'd like to go ahead and take him and have him join us. He just has a couple of minutes. And good morning, Sheriff Jenkins. Welcome to Success Happens.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's great to have you, and I have with me Linda Clark, and as you know, Linda is the executive director of the ranch, and we're sitting here talking about, you know, the various forms of addiction and the things that they're doing now at the ranch. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to check in with you on the heroin opioid situation, and one of the things I say is if we're not reversing the trend, you know, we're not necessarily making the impact we want to be making. So, and I know over the years that you and I have been dealing with and talking about this, you know, the trend has been staggering, you know, doubling every year and so forth. Can you tell us where we are currently in the trend of opioid epidemic or it could be fatalities, it could be overdoses, that sort of thing?
Where I see us now is actually the trend has maybe slowed just a little bit compared to last year, which was well above anything we've ever seen before. But we've seen it slow a little bit, but I don't believe it's been reversed. I do tell you what I'm concerned about, and I really believe because of the prevalence of Narcan, we're now probably seeing overdoses underreported. That's a fear I have.
And say more about that. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, because, you know, now families can go to the health department, take the training, have Narcan in their homes, Narcan among friends. I mean, it's so prevalent out there that pretty much everybody has exposure to Narcan, has Narcan in their possession. So now when an individual overdoses and someone administers Narcan, there's no reason to report it.
Wow.
There's no consequence. You know, a person who's overdosed doesn't have to go to the hospital. They're not forced to go into any recovery or treatment. So consequently, I think what we're seeing is probably an underreporting of overdoses.
Well, and it keeps the, I'm going to say it this way, which may not be politically correct, but forgive me, the nasty little secret. You know, it keeps it flying under the radar, and then we're not dealing with really reality. So I appreciate you saying that, Chuck, because I think, you know, I'm somebody who is really big on being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be straight about what we're dealing with.
Well, and I have been, Jennifer. You know that I've been out in front of this for probably 4 or 5 years now, trying to at least make the public aware of the problem, explain the magnitude of the problem, and just where we're at. And like I say, last year the number of overdoses exceeded 400, I think about 409 actually. This year we are in the maybe 260, 270 range. So, again, what we're seeing is a slowing down, maybe a slowing down, but I don't see a reversal.
Okay, and again, it could be this impact of the Narcan. We're not quite sure, but that's interesting to kind of start to look at because maybe you have to look at it in terms of maybe change the data collection to, I don't know, how many Narcan treatments are being given or something
of
that nature.
Well, that's a little bit hard to track, not so much through law enforcement, but through EMS because EMS, in a number of cases, will administer Narcan if there's any suspicion whatsoever, and it could be a cardiac arrest situation, but if there's any suspicion whatsoever of an overdose, they'll administer the Narcan, and it really may not, you know, be captured in statistics of an actual save due to an opioid overdose.
Got that.
Thing I want to mention, too, Jennifer, is that we have not seen a slowing down of drug complaints or investigations. On the enforcement side, we're continuing to go 100 miles an hour at this thing from different you know, from different directions, trafficking cases, local neighborhood-type investigations to highway interdiction efforts. Things have not slowed down.
And so when you say local neighboring, is that break-ins to support, you know, theft, to support the habit kind of thing?
No, what I'm saying there is that if you you call me tonight and say, hey, Sheriff, listen, I think there's drug activity at such and such a house in my neighborhood, could you investigate? Yes, we will. And that's what we term a neighborhood or community type investigation.
Got that. Well,
we'll shut that down as quick as we can.
Yeah, I get that. Well, I first of all, really kudos to you and your team for the work that you're doing to try and address this. And I know there's been a shift in the, let's say, philosophy to taking this to a health issue as opposed to just a straight criminal matter. Can you speak to that?
I can and I will. And I've said now, again, for a number of years that this is now not a law enforcement issue, but it really is a public health crisis and more, I think, of a societal crisis.
Well, I think that you're right and we all agree. You know, I think that message has gotten out there loud and clear because we know that, it seems, and maybe Linda will expand on this, you know, that when somebody's suffering from addiction, they're not themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how we say it.
I would like to make, can I make one more point?
Sure, please.
I don't know how long this segment is that we're talking. But, you know, the one thing that we need in this county is a detox facility. That's the one thing we don't have that we certainly need because, you know, I have families come to me, you know, after my meeting sometimes and say, Sheriff, I've got a son, daughter, grandson that's an addict, heroin addict, or an opioid addict, and they need help. Where can I go? And unfortunately, there's no place to send them. And that window of opportunity shuts really quick.
Well, that's an excellent place to say thank you for your time. And let me move on to Linda, and perhaps she can share some of their solutions. So this is perfect. And I really, really thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us and to share your insights.
And thank you. And Linda is doing a great job down there at the ranch. I'll add.
Yeah,
thank
great.
You, Sheriff.
Thank you so much. Have
Take
a great
care.
Day.
Bye.
Okay, so I think at this point, let us take a quick break, and then when we come back from the break, we'll talk with Linda Clark, Executive Director of the Ranch, further about the program and how they're really addressing this treatment, need, et cetera, here in the area. So you're listening to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Linda Clark, who is Executive Director of The Ranch. Bringing Hope to Maryland is your tagline, and I think it's quite appropriate to have that tagline given the work that you're doing to help people who are suffering from drug and alcohol addiction. You know, you guys have had a rich and varied past, but you are where you are today, and I think why I got involved with you is that you're addressing a current need and a reality that is so overwhelming at this point. It must be hard for you to think, gosh, how do we tackle this, right? So let's go back to some of the things that the sheriff shared were, you know, the concerns around Narcan and some of these things. So back to the ranch. How are you addressing some of these concerns for the opioid epidemic? Let's start with that.
Okay. We can speak about Narcan, and I can share that most of our clients have Narcan in their possession, even at the ranch. So they are carrying Narcan with them. And, you know, one of the things I know that we have heard and have been told many times, it's the last person that is using heroin or an opioid that overdoses that does not have that person there to administer Narcan. And sometimes that's the one that dies. The first ones that there's somebody there to administer it get sent off to the hospital or you know, they've left the scene, but the last person there does not have that person to administer that Narcan. And I think Sheriff Jenkins is right. I think the numbers are very skewed as to how many overdoses we have. They're not being reported. Narcan's just being administered at home among the addicts. So when you look at those numbers, keep that in mind. It's much worse than what that board in Frederick County states every month. The same thing also for overdoses. Frederick County individuals that overdose don't always overdose in Frederick County. So the numbers for overdoses and deaths are also skewed.
Well, likewise, though, somebody could be up here from, I don't know, Manassas and have an overdose here. So I don't know that you can necessarily discount that just because
I think because of purchasing it mainly in Baltimore, a lot of people head to Baltimore. The trip from Baltimore back to Frederick is where you'll see they will stop along that way to use and overdose along the way. So I think we think our numbers are a lot higher for overdose deaths also. But the ranch, seeing that, you know, just how large the epidemic is, I don't think that there's any individual that it hasn't touched their life somehow, whether it's in their own family, whether it's in their neighborhood or their school or their church. Almost everybody knows somebody that is suffering with addiction or has overdosed. And so, you know, we are working hard to provide an additional place for them to get treatment. I think the longer you can spend in a facility for treatment, the better your chances of success are. And usually an inpatient facility is a 28-day program. So coming out of there, the ranch offers a program that averages about 3 months, where it's residential and we do intensive outpatient therapy for our clients.
So do they live on the premises for
they
those 3 months?
They do live on the premises, yep. Mm-hmm. And this would be for someone who would not be successful doing intensive outpatient from home. So some people can be successful with that.
And how do you, if you will, diagnose them as to who could succeed in an outpatient treatment and who would not succeed and they need that inpatient residential?
Well, a lot of times these clients have already been through intensive outpatient on their own and they're not succeeding in that program. So they're being referred to us by other programs that just have outpatient programs.
So you could say they're stepping up their treatment.
They're stepping up or they could be stepping down from inpatient. So it's a step down from inpatient. They know coming out of inpatient, I'm not ready to go home and be successful. I need a longer time away so that I can just concentrate on my recovery and, you know, to a time to learn the skills they need to be successful.
So I know somebody who was clean for a number of years and then got back into it. So I don't even know that 3 months is enough time, is it?
I don't think 3 months is enough time, but, you know.
Is it a year and a half, 2 year kind of ongoing program in various forms?
Well, we say it averages three. It can be as short as two if you finish your program early. We can go a little longer, 4 months or something. They can step down out of intensive outpatient and go just to outpatient, which could make it a longer stay. But the longer, definitely the longer that you get to just concentrate on your recovery without having to worry about a lot of outside triggers, the better off your chances of success.
So when you say an outpatient stay, are they staying in the facility? That outpatient is out of the
intensive
facility.
Intensive outpatient is done. We do it as an outpatient, standalone outpatient that you could do from home.
So they come to you through the day. They spend the day with you. Tell us how that looks.
Okay. No, an intensive outpatient, they would come just for treatment for a few hours a week, a couple times a week. But the guys in our program will get that intensive outpatient while living at the ranch. Now, one of the areas that we are ready to begin is partial hospitalization. And that is a program where you could come, you'll stay the entire day. You'll do all the additional things our residential guys do. You'll have a lot more therapy and clinical hours. And then you go home at night. So that's an option for someone that needs a little bit of more clinical. They can come do the program. They can do the life skills. They can do the recreation. They'll do additional therapy with our clinical supervisor and our drug and alcohol counselors, and then go home in the evening. So it's a step between doing outpatient and a step between really going into residential.
So on this continuum of care, let's say there's various ways to plug in, get the treatment you need. How much does psychology play into this? Because I can get there's, you know, medical treatments, but how much does the psychology of drugs, drug use, addiction, self-esteem, self-confidence, how much does that play into this?
Well, it's huge. You know, I think probably 90% of our clients have mental health issues, whether it's depression or anxiety. For even more serious things, they could be bipolar. And those things definitely play a part.
Let me ask something. And at some point, we're going to have Mental Health Association on. They have a great program. Huge respect for them and the work that they do. And we can talk a little bit about how you guys coordinate. But how often do you think that some of those things are undiagnosed? In other words, somebody's self-medicating using drugs as opposed to understanding that there may be some medical condition that they need to be treating.
Well, I think that happens a lot. I mean, I hear a lot of our guys that, you know, anxiety is huge, and they're medicating themselves because of their anxiety. Low self-esteem. They have low self-esteem issues. But if they take drugs, it makes them feel like a different person. You know, all of a sudden, it gives them the confidence to be able to relate to people and to join into the group and feel okay. So I think it's a huge thing. I think you see it with teenagers, especially, even wanting to fit in. But you know, we've seen it with clients with ADHD who they don't fit in. You know, they just have never fit in. And so they're using drugs to help them with that.
Not to diminish that, because that's huge. But if we know that, then there should be things we should be doing at the younger age groups to help build self-esteem and self-confidence in a way that doesn't leave them vulnerable to making these bad choices later. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break, because I'm a huge believer. You know, I came from a place in my life where I didn't have self-confidence, but you couldn't tell.
Right, right.
I was really good at covering it up.
Absolutely.
And so I think we learn to say, hey, how are you? We put on a happy face, and we're really dealing with something, and nobody knows. So on that note, I'm going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Linda Clark, who's the executive director of The Ranch, which is a treatment center dealing with addiction, different forms. And, you know, I always hesitate, you know, to talk about mental health issues, because we as a society have gotten to the point where we say, well, if you're not a professional, you know, you're talking out of school or something, or you might even be talking about something you're not licensed to talk about and so forth. But at some point, we as a society have to deal with, there's lots of folks out there who are suffering in various forms, you know, and sometimes you go through a rough patch in life and, you know, I've gone through times where I've not been my happy, perky self. So, you know, how do we deal with that? How do we cope? So I would assume that one of the things you guys got to deal with is coping mechanisms, teaching people how to cope with disappointment or life when it doesn't go exactly the way we expect it to.
Absolutely.
Or when somebody's a jerk to us. Well, guess what? You know, there are people out there who aren't the nicest people in the world, but that shouldn't, you know, take us off our game. So how do you teach those kinds of coping skills to somebody who's dealing with addiction, and how they cope is they go to a drug or alcohol?
Well, those things are actually done in our intensive outpatient therapy, where they look at those things and, you know, through that they go through different classes. But
give us a for example.
Okay, communication. Say this week they're working on communication skills to get them better at being able to communicate, to feel comfortable communicating with people. If you have that anxiety and you don't want to talk to people or you don't want to be around people, learning good communication skills without using drugs to make you feel comfortable you know, will help. So it's always taking whatever their trigger is or what their issue is that causes them to reach for drugs to feel comfortable or to be able to survive whatever they're, you know, they're doing or whatever they're in, and give them skills so that they don't reach for the drugs or the alcohol.
Well, and I would assume, and I've, you know, had to do a lot of self-work. You know, I've done a lot of self-development stuff. We don't always know what our triggers are. In fact, most of the time we don't. We don't know what our stuff is, so to speak. So how do you help them discover for themselves what that thing is that hooks them?
Well, you know, as they go through their therapy, they work on different areas. So if it's not one area, when they work on the other, they'll go through those things. It could be.
So do you exercises to kind of help them discover this stuff?
Our clinical team does.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good. Okay.
Now they also
talk about who you have on your clinical team.
Janine Alberton is our clinical supervisor, and we have Bradley Metters as a drug and alcohol counselor trainee working there. So that is our clinical staff right now. Carlton Hill has been with us also part time.
And is your plan to expand that service? Seems to me in our conversations you're looking to expand some of this.
We actually are looking to bring on some more counselors. It's on our website, so if you're interested, you know, check out our website.
Please apply. Yeah.
You know, it's www.ranchmd.org. You know, yes, we have some positions that are open right now. We're looking to fill.
Well, and let's maybe give people the context. So currently you have how many beds for residential?
We have 16 beds right now. We will shortly be expanding that up to 48 beds.
Which is so exciting to me because, and that's
yes.
really where I got involved, because I thought, you know, there's such a great need and you have such a beautiful spot there. It needs to be fully utilized. So, how many people are currently filling those 16 beds? Are you full?
We have 14 people on the program right now.
So you've got two openings.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if anybody out there knows of somebody that needs this treatment, they need to contact you and go to ranchmd.org
mm-hmm. right.
and reach out. We'll at some point we'll give your phone number. Well, we can do it right now and make sure that people can call you as well if they need your help, which is 301-874-4701. That's 301-874-4701 and ranchmd.org. So make sure that you reach out. And sometimes we have to, with love and grace, reach out for somebody we care about. Because they may not do it. They may not reach out. So to the extent that sometimes we take charge, right?
Right.
Intervene.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, you can bring them out too if you want to bring them out just for a tour and let them see the facility. We have we have a gorgeous facility, 204 acres out in the country, very serene, and a great facility. We have a full-size gymnasium. And so I think when they see that, they come out and see that, it's not as scary as, you know, they may think it would be. I mean, it's very relaxed there. So, you know, we're open for tours if you'd like to bring someone out.
Very good. So as we look then at expanding your program to 48 beds, one of the things that I've kind of had an awareness of, I'll say, and therefore passion for, is that sometimes there are women suffering addiction who are moms, and it's hard for them if they are using or struggling perhaps with that. To find housing for them and their kids. And so I've kind of asked you, do you think we can create some sort of a program there that would allow for women and children in whatever's an appropriate fashion to have a place to go? So can you maybe talk to that?
You know, we have discussed that and you know, what we feel with us having adult men there, mm-hmm. we don't feel comfortable having children there. We do have one more building, a residential building, that we may renovate and open for women. It is much harder for women in the state of Maryland to find places to go for treatment. So that is a possibility in the next year or so that we may open up that front house that we have for women. I don't think we'll ever see kids. We just feel a little reluctant to have the adult men on the same property
as children. I think that's great. That's great that you've identified that as a concern, and you know, you're creating the structure that will work. So let's step back for a second, because I want to get to know kind of why would you choose this field? Because, you know, when you look at this, this is an intense world that you're in.
Well, I would say, you know, I worked for the Maryland Sheriff Youth Ranch. I've been there 12 years now and almost 13. And, you know, we transitioned over to this because of the need. And I was at the group home because, you know, to me, I will share, it was a ministry for me. It is more like a ministry than a job. It allows me to care for people that need care. I find it very rewarding to work there. You know, when I leave at the end of the night, I look around at the guys that we work with right now, and it's a blessing. The blessing is mine to be able to work with them. They are under such a stigma from sometimes the community about who they are, and they're no different than you or I. They're great people, and, you know, to be able to help them, to get them back to where they should be, to get them walking on their own, not using drugs, not using alcohol, it's a tremendous thing. Like I said, the blessing is mine, and it's a tremendous blessing to be able to work with this population.
Well, thank goodness you're there. I mean, clearly you have a passion for the work, and that's what it takes to be successful. So, you know, when you look at, you know, you mentioned that they're no different than you or I. I mean, they have a condition that they're dealing with. How much, and maybe you offer this, maybe you don't, so I'm just looking. Do you offer a mentoring kind of component where men can come in and, if you will, adopt one of these guys and take them under their wing and just really try and mentor them to success?
I don't have an adult mentoring program. We did have and do, if I get an adolescent in for the outpatient, work with Youth for Christ. Arms Rundahl will work with that and bring in mentors for adolescents. But for our men, a lot of our employees actually step in and fulfill that role as mentor. They take them to church. They go with them to court. They follow them after they leave our program. We're very much a family type atmosphere at the ranch. So
once you're part of that family, you're always a part of that family.
Absolutely.
Very good.
Yep, absolutely.
Because I think the leaving the program is the critical piece.
Yes.
Because if you feel alone when you get out, and to your point, maybe you don't feel like people really get who you are or understand your struggles. If you have somebody there who does.
Absolutely. I mean, we do a quarterly alumni event where we invite our graduates back to the ranch.
Oh, great. I didn't know that.
We just had a fall party. So we had laser tag and pumpkin carving, and they were able to bring their family with them. And that's our way of keeping in touch with them. You know, we very often are calling them and checking on them. But it's nice to bring them back on property and do an event where they can bring their family. You know, they are an example to the guys in the program that I've graduated. I'm doing well. And they know that at any time, if they have an issue, they reach back out to us. You know, we work with them to get them whatever help they need, you know. So it works both ways. I mean, I think they feel very comfortable contacting us at any point after they leave. But
if they're struggling, they reach out.
But we're in contact with them also on a regular basis. So our employees, like I said, are very involved with the guys while they're in the program and after they leave the program.
Well, and my understanding is that peer-to-peer support is so valuable and I think effective, is it not?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're real fortunate. We have two guys that have graduated the program that are actually working part-time for us right now. And it's nice to have them there, too, for that same reason, for the guys to see, you know, they've been successful. Now they're working. And they mentor the guys some in the program also.
So like your tagline says, the ranch, bringing hope to Maryland, bringing hope to those young men who
Absolutely.
Are struggling.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. Really thank you, Linda, for being here. And we'll be right back. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Linda Clark, who's the executive director of the ranch, formerly the Maryland Sheriff's Youth Ranch. That's a mouthful. So I like the ranch. It's good. Yes. It's tight. And it's a drug and alcohol addiction treatment facility. It's actually a campus, if you will. It's beautiful, a couple hundred acres in South Frederick County. And let me just deal with one thing before I move to another point. Do you serve anyone from anywhere? I mean, if somebody from Pennsylvania is listening, because we go all the way up to Gettysburg or West Virginia, can they come to the ranch?
They can. We do have a priority list where Frederick County does have first priority, followed by other counties in the state of Maryland, and then out-of-state clients.
Okay, very good. And again, you have two openings right now. Now, one of the things I wanted to deal with is you had mentioned off air, and I want to get this from you, the idea that most of the gentlemen you're working with in the program began this journey in their adolescent years. So can you talk about that? How young have they started?
And we have, you know, I'd say 75-80% of our guys are starting around the age of 11 is what we see, you know, where they are getting alcohol at maybe a party, a family party. You know, some have said I used to suck off the foam from my grandfather's beer. We've even seen them down to five-year-olds started smoking marijuana at 5 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it was in the family. But regardless, a lot of them start around that age, 11, 12 years old, of drinking alcohol. They're getting it from a leftover cup sitting at a party. And they progress from there to marijuana, to cocaine, to heroin. They go step by step, and it gets worse and worse.
Well, that begs the question then, how do you feel about the whole cannabis thing? That's a whole nother show. But, I've always felt this idea of a gateway drug is very relevant, just given, you know, if you're using for that purpose, it can.
Personally, I am not for legalizing marijuana, because we've seen too many times.
Say that again, because I talked over you.
Oh, I said personally, I am not in favor of legalizing marijuana, because I've seen too many people. Too many children and adolescents starting with that and then progressing on to more dangerous drugs. You know, anybody under the age, I believe, of 25 that smokes marijuana does irreparable damage to their developing brain. And that's a serious issue. You know, we have adult men in our program that are very adolescent-like. They're very childlike in their behavior, because they damaged that brain when they were younger and they didn't kind of mature past those adolescent years. So it's a serious thing. And I think, from what we've seen, it's too dangerous to me to legalize. It is a gateway drug, for sure. There's no doubt. I have no doubt about it.
Have you ever testified to that effect?
No, yeah. I haven't.
Well, it's unfortunate. But, you know, thank you for giving your insight about that. So let's talk about you mentioned scholarship. Talk about that.
Right now, the ranch has some scholarship funding. We entered into a partnership with the Rotary Club of Frederick. They gave us a grant to provide some scholarship money. So for individuals that don't have the finances to get into treatment, now's a perfect time to apply if you know of someone in need. The ranch has a per week fee of $135 for our residential stay. We do use Medicaid. So Medicaid or we'll pay for your intensive outpatient therapy. But that residential stay isn't covered by insurance, and individuals sometimes have a hard time coming up with that money. A lot of addicts and drug users are homeless. They've lost their jobs, and they don't have a cushion of money to be able to get into treatment.
So don't let the lack of money or funding be the reason you don't seek help. Absolutely. Is what you're saying.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, and I know that there are, you know, treatment can be in the thousands. So it is, I think, perceived a lot of times as very expensive to get treatment.
It can be very expensive. I know there are outpatient facilities for the 1 month that can range $30,000 to $65,000 for 1 month.
My goodness.
So $135 a week, we're like $540 a month.
Right.
You know, that is low. And, you know, we're a nonprofit facility, so we're not out to make a profit on these guys. You know, our desire is just to get them in and get them the help they need. So
now, that being said, you are working with other organizations or treatment providers in the community. I'm thinking of Serenity Treatment Centers, and I know Deb Conroy and her partner, they've done some great work. How are you working with those, collaborating in the community with other facilities like that?
Well, right now, currently, we work with the detention center and drug court. So we get some guys that are coming out of either one of those programs, and they come into treatment. The hospital, Frederick Memorial Hospital, works with us. And then we work with all the other outpatient and intensive outpatient providers around the state. They refer people to our program. So we've journeyed in some to Carroll County now. Working with a detention center there and drug court there also.
Well, it's a statewide national issue. It has no borders.
Right,
it doesn't
right.
care about counties. It doesn't right. care about, you know, state jurisdictions. It's a ferocious monster. And,
yes,
you know, thank you for what you've been doing to try and, I'm going to say mitigate, you know, what's been going on. And, you know, I continue to say, until we reverse the trend, we're not winning this game. You know, we got to keep at it and we got to stay on top of it. You know, I've been watching it now for 3 or 4 years. I've actually known about the issue since about 06 when I did volunteerism in the detention center, and I would see women there who were arrested in Frederick County because of, to your point earlier, the drugs coming in through Baltimore, that's where they're getting them, and they're passing through Frederick on their way to, this woman was from Manassas. So another woman was from Michigan. So, you know, we've had an issue for a long time, and some of it's just geographical positioning. But, you know, I know that the sheriff and many, many people in law enforcement are doing a lot to try and track down and crack down on those drug dealers. So hopefully we will continue to make progress. And I just really thank you for your leadership. I will continue to help and support you however I can to encourage people. So let's give your information one more time. It is The Ranch, Bringing Hope to Maryland. And the website is ranchmd.org, ranchmd.org. And you can reach them on 301-874-4701. I'd like to thank Linda Clark, Executive Director of The Ranch, for being here. And I really wish you the very, very best as you save lives.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it.
It's been wonderful to have you here. I'd like to also remind people, please go to our podcast. You can hear the show. You can share the show. Send the URL link out to people you know who need this information. Spread the word. It may save a life. And I'd like to thank Bob Dacey, my engineer. I'd like to thank Sweeties on the Creek and Xerox Complete Document Solutions. Have a fabulous week, and we'll talk to you next Saturday. This has been Success Happens on Free Talk 930 WFMD.